The Ark of Millions of Years, The Tower of Babel. From the King James Version of the Holy Bible, Genesis chapter 11, it translates as follows. And the whole earth was of one language, and of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, Go to, let us make brick, and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. And they said, Go to, let us build a city and a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven. And let us make us a name, lest we be scattered abroad the face of the whole earth. And the Lord came down to see the city and the tower, when the children of men builded. And the Lord said, Behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. Go to, let us go down, and there confound their language, that they may not understand one another's speech. So the Lord scattered them abroad from thence upon the face of all the earth. And from thence did the Lord scatter them abroad upon all the face of the earth. From Farrar Fenton's translation of the Holy Bible in Modern English, the same account reads as follows. All the country was agreed for settled objects. But some of them, marching from the east, arrived at a plain, the bushland, and halted there. Then each said to his neighbor, Come, let us set to work making bricks, and see that they are properly burnt, and bricks shall serve us for stone, and petroleum for mortar. So they agreed, We will build here for ourselves a city and a tower, whose top shall reach the sky. Thus we shall make a beacon for ourselves, so that we may not be scattered over all the surface of the country. But a chief came down to inspect the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the chief said, You see, all these people are united in the same purpose, and having begun to do this, they will not be restrained from anything they determine upon. I will go down and frustrate their designs, so that one will not listen to another's proposals. So the chief scattered them over the surface of the whole country, and they abandoned the building of the city. They therefore call its name Babel, because it was there that the chief confused the designs of all the country. Thus from here the Lord scattered them all over the surface of the land. Farrar Fenton's footnotes give further insight into his translation as follows. The word Jehovah, commonly translated Lord, was originally used as a title of honor for nobles or governors, as shown in Genesis chapter 13, and elsewhere, as in Exodus chapter 24, where the title is given to the chief of a tribe who attempted to murder Moses, and was not reserved as a synonym for God until after the promulgation of the law from Sinai. In this passage, it is evident that it did not mean the supreme being, and to translate it as if it did misleads the reader. Since Farrar Fenton's translation is considered the most accurate translation of the Holy Bible, having been translated into English directly from the original Hebrew, Chaldee, and Greek, the meaning of those scriptures changes dramatically from those we have traditionally accepted in the King James Version. Prior to receiving the promulgation of the law from Sinai, God was addressed as the ever-living. So where did the story of the confusion of languages creep in? We believe that it is somewhere in between. One must examine other writings, sort out the many myths, and read in between the lines to find out the whole truth before jumping to the wrong conclusions. After researching many records, the following scenario emerged, one that we would like to present as follows. All the records that we were able to access do agree that Noah and his people came from the east and settled on the plain of Shinar, Shumir, Shumer, or Sumer, ancient Sumeria. This area is identical with Babylonia or southern Mesopotamia, now modern-day Iraq. Shumer may be a Sumerian form of Shem. The word Shumer was pronounced Shumi or Shum, later interpreted in the Hebrew tongue as Shem. This is not to be confused with Samaria, an area in ancient Palestine between Judea and Galilee, known today as the West Bank region. Ferrer Fenton footnoted that Shinar signifies bushland. Archaeology dates the origin of the Sumerian civilization to circa 4500 BC. This area was first peopled by Turanian tribes. Around 3000 BC, tribes of Semites invade and become its rulers. These Semites would be the people of Noah. There is archaeological evidence during this time period that the area was invaded by a superior race of people who brought with them advanced technology in farming, tools, construction, metallurgy, and writing. New grains, such as barley and wheat, were introduced in farming, and new farming techniques were developed, such as irrigation and the use of the plow. There were cattle, goat, and sheep raisers, as well as fishermen. The use of wheeled vehicles, the sailboat, and the potter's wheel were all of Sumerian origin. From earliest times, Sumerian architects made use of the arch, dome, and vault that was probably introduced to Greece and Rome from contact with Babylonian cities. Using clay tablets to inscribe upon, they devised a system of cuneiform script and pictogram writing that was used all over the ancient civilizations of the Near East and Western Asia, including India, and eventually brought to Europe. In the field of mathematics, the Sumerians devised a decimal system that probably was a prototype of the Hindu-Arabic decimal system currently in use today. They formulated the earliest concepts of algebra and geometry. They were the first to pave roads, the first to have a postal system, the first to make a magnifying glass, the first to have public libraries, the first to found a public university, the first to have public schools, to write the first literature, poetry, epics, hymnals, medical texts, and the first to have a complex sewer system with flushing toilets. Legal and ethical concepts with moral ideals were developed and written down by the Sumerians. They were the first to spell out in writing law codes so that no misunderstanding could happen, basically inventing law, which became the foundation for their central government and future governments throughout the world. Essentially, these concepts were identical with those of the Hebrews. The Sumerians even mapped the heavens. They had scale maps of our solar system, knowledge that we didn't have until the 20th century. They had electric batteries, may have had electric lights, and had the knowledge to electroplate gold. It seems the Egyptians may have learned this technology from contact with Noah's people. In commerce, a system of weights and measures were developed and used until the Roman period. Last but not least, they brewed beer. As to physical appearances, these early Semites were fair-skinned, tall, and slender. They called themselves the Sagigya, which means black-headed ones. As previously discussed in Volume 1, we estimate the union of the polarity occurred around 4800 BC. By the time Noah and his family arrived to the plain of Shinar, 800 or more years had passed. During those years, Noah's family had multiplied greatly, even to the fifth or sixth generation of descendants. Their numbers could have easily reached 1 million or more. It was a slow migration over a number of years, gradually leaving the eastern mountainous regions of ancient Armenia, where the Ark had rested, into northern ancient Babylonia, Iraq, maybe into Arabia, and lastly into southern Mesopotamia. There is much evidence to suggest that the ancient Sumerians and Noah's people were one and the same. This, of course, will move the timeline much further back than previously thought by biblical scholars. It appears that Noah and most of his descendants spoke the archaic Sumerian language. Was this the pure Adamic language that was spoken on the spiritual earth? It very well could be. Recognizing that some change would have occurred over a period of 800 years, Sumerian was not a Semitic language, neither was Noah a Semite. The descendants of Shem were Semites. The Semitic languages developed through Shem's descendants, the result of mixing with other cultures who spoke other languages. Some of Shem's descendants were most likely bilingual, speaking the Semitic, ancient Akkadian tongue as well as Sumerian. Over a period of time, the Semitic Akkadian language gradually replaced Sumerian as the main spoken language of Sumer. Language is a strange thing. It is not static, but is always in perpetual change. It is always evolving. Sumerian is an unclassified language, which has so far resisted all attempts to relate it to any known living or dead language. Maybe this is because the language came from another world, the spiritual earth, and was brought here by Noah. Genesis chapter 11 records, "And the whole earth was of one language and of one speech." This verse is misleading. The Jews had a peculiar style of writing that is well known by biblical students of Scripture. Even though the verse translates as whole earth, the intent and meaning was different from a Jewish standpoint during ancient times. The Jewish intent and meaning of the same verse would read, if it were written in today's times, "And the whole region was of one language and of one speech." Another example of this style of writing that appears many times in biblical scriptures is, "And all the people were killed." The Jewish intent and meaning would be, "And all the people in the region were killed," or, "As far as I know, all the people were killed." This peculiar style of writing is also found in the Book of Mormon. The important thing to remember is that language has changed. Even as to intent and meaning, it is continuing to do so. Employment of the peculiar literary style of writing has caused much confusion in non-Jewish literary circles. Historians know that prior to the Tower of Babel, there were various different tribes of people in many foreign lands that spoke different tongues. This is an established fact, which consequently has caused countless numbers of people to view the Tower of Babel as a myth. Returning to the story, Noah and his descendants have migrated into the plain of Shinar or Shinar. The whole region now speaks one language and one tongue, the archaic Sumerian language. Families paired off into tribes and were scattered over all the region, but remained in relative close proximity to each other. It is said that the families couldn't bear to depart from each other and scatter as God had commanded nearly 800 years previous. Because they now lived in Sumer, they were called Sumerians. Among the descendants of Ham was Nimrod, the grandson of Noah, son of Cush. His father, Cush, had married his mother at an advanced age, and Nimrod was the beloved and only son of his old age. Cush may have been credited to have been his father, but he was a giant son of the Nephilim, or son of one of the giants born to his mortal mother. Nimrod was his Hebrew name, but current thinking is that he was the Babylonian king called Gilgamesh. Your authors are in agreement with his true identity. The Dead Sea Scrolls identify Gilgamesh as being two-thirds god and one-third human, which makes him a demigod. Being a giant offspring, he was endowed with incredible strength, size, and cunning. Genesis chapter 10 describes him as a mighty hunter before the Lord. Besides being a mighty hunter, he was also known as both a conqueror and builder of cities after the great flood of Noah. He built cities all over the ancient Near East, and perhaps throughout the entire known world, in order to restore civilization back to the world following the flood of Noah. He was truly a mighty man, one of the giant offspring of the Watchers, who possessed the inherited nature of perversion, idolatry, and evil inclination. The book of Jasher discloses that after Nimrod had joyfully returned from one of his many battles victoriously, his brethren, together with those who knew him before, assembled to make him king over them, and they placed the regal crown upon his head. Afterwards, he advised with his counselors to build a city for his palace, and they did so. And they found a large valley opposite to the east, and they built him a large and extensive city. And Nimrod called the name of the city that he built Shinar. A tower was built in the city to act as a beacon to draw the dispersed tribes into the city from time to time. The city and tower was to act as a unification point or central government for all the tribes. Noah may have approved of the endeavor. In Volume 1 of The Ark of Millions of Years, on page 480, we wrote that Francis Nunez de la Vega, Bishop of Chiapas, stated that he saved a partially burned book purported to be written by Votan, grandson of Noah, where he wrote the following: that he saw the great wall, namely the Tower of Babel, which was built from earth to heaven at the bidding of his grandfather Noah. The book of Jasher further discloses that Nimrod reigned in the earth over all the sons of Noah, and that they were all under his power and counsel. The book of Jasher states additionally that it took about 600,000 men many years to build the city and the tower. Some mud bricks used in the construction of the city and tower had to be burnt by fire to make them strong. Others were sun-baked. This method of construction was slow and labor-intensive. The Book of Jubilees, used in 200 BC to 90 AD, contains one of the most detailed construction accounts found anywhere in building of the tower. And they began to build, and in the fourth week that they made brick with fire, and the bricks served them for stone, and the clay with which they cemented them together was asphalt, which come out of the sea, and out of the fountains of water in the land of Shinar. And they built it, 43 years were they building it. Its breadth was 203 bricks, and the height of a brick was the third of one. Its height amounted to 5,433 cubits and 2 palms. And the extent of one wall was 13 stades, and of the other 30 stades. According to Farrar Fenton's translation, the city and tower was never finished. A great chief, most likely Shem, didn't approve of the undertaking. Perhaps it was too costly in man-hours, or maybe he remembered God's command to scatter, and feared a severe judgment from the ever-living if they failed to do so. Shem would have viewed their failure to obey the ever-living's command as a rebellion against God, regardless of the reason. He felt compelled to frustrate their designs to the point that the workers threw up their hands and simply walked off the job. Sometime later, when the tribes still refused to scatter, the ever-living confused their tongues, and then they obeyed the command to scatter. Into foreign lands of another people who already spoke different languages, they migrated as given in the Table of Nations in Genesis. Their purpose was to restore civilization that was lost during the 9500 BC cataclysm, provide an uncorrupted bloodline for the Messiah to be born into, and to bring to the people of this planet the knowledge of their Creator, the one true God, the ever-living. Thereafter, the tower was called Babel, referencing to babbling, because the confusion of languages occurred in that region around it. An account is given in the Book of Jubilees that God overturned the tower with a great wind, abandoned the partially built city, and tower fell into ruin, but not for long. Afterwards, the Book of Jasher, chapter 11, records that Nimrod built 4 cities. The first city he named Babel, in memory of the first city and tower. The second was Erech, the third was Eked, and the fourth was Calna. After Babel was built, Nimrod lived there and renewed his reign over the subjects and princes who now call him Nimrod by a new name, Amraphel. Nimrod was his Hebrew name. His Sumerian name was Amraphel, and his Babylonian name was Gilgamesh. Ferrer Fenton's translation of the Bible lists the 4 cities of Nimrod as Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calna in the bushland. The King James Version of Genesis chapter 10 lists the 4 cities as Babel, Erech, Akkad, and Calna. It is believed that Babel is the city of Babylon, Calna is believed to be Calno, and Kane, the modern Nefer, lying in ruins as a lofty mound of earth on the east bank of the Euphrates, about 60 miles southeast from Babylon. Akkad, or Agade, has yet been undiscovered. The biblical Erech, or Erech, was known as Unug to the Sumerians and called Uruk today. Iraq derives its name from Uruk. To the Greeks it was known as Orchoe, and to the Arabs, Warka. The ancient city is located about 140 miles southeast from Baghdad, situated east of the present bed of the Euphrates. These 4 cities were the first of Nimrod's kingdom. From there he went to Assyria and built Nineveh, Kala, Rezin, and Rehoboth. Adding to the confusion is the well-known king list that lists the first 3 Sumerian dynasties after the flood as those of Kish, Erech, and Ur, in that order. Historians have learned from Sumerian epics and hymnal lore that the last 2 kings of the Kish dynasty, Emebaragezi and his son Aga, were contemporaries of Gilgamesh, the 5th ruler of Erech, with whom they fought bitter battles for supreme rulership over Sumer. Cuneiformis generally accepted that the 2 first dynasties of Kish and Erech were overlapped. The original city of Shinar, or Shinar, has not yet been discovered or identified in Babylonia. However, there is strong evidence that the city of Shinar, Babel, was not Babylon, as commonly believed, but rather be rebuilt as the far older Eridu, south of Ur, where there is a very large ruin of an abandoned ziggurat. Ziggurats were a product of Sumerian architecture. The one pictured below is a typical example of the pyramidal building style. It is believed, with some certainty, that the Tower of Shinar, Babel, was a ziggurat. all of Nimrod's cities had a ziggurat. Most were built on immense scale. The inner core of construction was sun-baked bricks, with the outer facade made of fire-glazed bricks in different colors. They would be shaped as a square, rectangle, or oval. It was not a place of public worship or ceremonies, but a temple. In the beginning, accepted as a house of God, and tended to by priests. Each city took great pride in their religious center. The seven tiers symbolically represented the structuring of the cosmos, each tier representing one of the seven heavens or universes, knowledge that Noah and his family brought to Shinar. Nimrod's wife was named Semiramis. She and Nimrod corrupted the religion of Noah by introducing the worship of other gods after the sons and grandsons of Noah were scattered. It is evident that some third generation and generations beyond remained in Shinar to carry on Sumerian traditions and language. The god of Noah was replaced by the worship of many Babylonian gods. Semiramis started the worship of Babylonian gods in Sumer, and Nimrod enforced the belief. They were the source of all pagan religions in the world. Nimrod was an evil king who was only benevolent to his subjects if they paid tribute to him. On April 29, 2003, the BBC News announced that archaeologists in Iraq believed they may have found the lost tomb of King Gilgamesh, the subject of the oldest book in history. The following is the news story. The Epic of Gilgamesh, written by a Middle Eastern scholar 2,500 years before the birth of Christ, commemorated the life of the ruler of the city of Uruk, from which Iraq gets its name. Now, a German-led expedition has discovered what is thought to be the entire city of Uruk, including where the Euphrates once flowed, the last resting place of its famous king. I don't want to say definitely it was the grave of King Gilgamesh, but it looks very similar to that described in the epic, said George Fassbinder of the Bavarian Department of Historical Monuments in Munich, as he told to the BBC World Services Science in Action program. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, actually a set of inscribed clay tablets, Gilgamesh was described as having been buried under the Euphrates, in a tomb apparently constructed when the waters of the ancient river parted following his death. We found just outside the city an area in the middle of the former Euphrates River, the remains of such a building, which could be interpreted as a burial. Mr. Fassbinder said, the amazing discovery of the ancient city under the Iraqi desert has been made possible by modern technology. By differences in magnetization in the soil, you can look into the ground. The difference between mud bricks and sediments in the Euphrates River gives a very detailed structure. This creates a magnetogram, which is then digitally mapped, effectively giving a town plan of Uruk. He added, the most surprising thing was that we found structures already described by Gilgamesh. We covered more than 100 hectares, and we found garden structures and field structures as described in the epic, and we found Babylonia houses. The most astonishing find was an incredibly sophisticated system of canals. Very clearly, we can see in the canals some structures showing that flooding destroyed some houses, which means it was a highly developed system. It was like Venice in the desert. It was during the reign of King Nebuchadnezzar that the ancient city of Babylon was built, its awe-inspiring beauty and magnificence surpassing all ancient cities of its time, taking 80 years to build. Its famous hanging gardens were proclaimed one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. Like modern-day Budapest, Babylon was built on both sides of the Euphrates River. In circa 670 BC, Nebuchadnezzar wrote, "A former king built the temple of the seven lights of the earth, but he did not complete its head. Since a remote time, people had abandoned it, without order expressing their words. Since that time, earthquakes and lightning had dispersed its sun-dried clay, the bricks of the casing had split, and the earth of the interior had been scattered in heaps. Merodach, the great lord, excited my mind to repair this building. I do not change the site, nor did I take away the foundation stone as it had been in former times. So I founded it, I made it, and as it had been in ancient days, I so exalted the summit." Inside the city, a ziggurat, called Etemenaki, interpreted to mean the temple of the creation of heaven and earth, was constructed. It was one of the largest ziggurats ever built, and was dedicated to the Babylonian god Marduk. In 440 BC, the Greek historian Herodotus wrote, "Babylon's outwall is the main defense of the city. There is, however, a second inner wall of less thickness than the first, but very little inferior to it in strength. The center of each division of the town was occupied by a fortress. In the one stood the palace of the kings, surrounded by a wall of great strength and size. In the other was the sacred precinct of Jupiter Belus, a square enclosure 2 furlongs, that's 402 meters, each way, with gates of solid brass, which was also remaining in my time. In the middle of the precinct there was a tower of solid masonry, 1 furlong, 201 meters, in length and breadth, upon which was raised a second tower, and on that a third, and so on up to 8. The ascent to the top is on the outside, by a path which winds round all the towers. When one is about halfway up, one finds a resting place and seats, where persons are wont to sit some time on their way to the summit. On the topmost tower there is a spacious temple, and inside the temple stands a couch of unusual size, richly adorned, with a golden table by its side. There is no statue of any kind set up in the palace, nor is the chamber occupied of nights by any one but a single native woman, who, as the Chaldeans, the priests of the god, affirm, is chosen for himself by the deity out of all the women of the land." Herodotus may not have actually seen the tower himself, but nevertheless wrote of it. He erred in saying that it had 8 tiers instead of 7 tiers. Their god, Marduk, was a fallen son of God, one of the Nephilim. Women chosen by Marduk were brought nightly to the temple and taken to the top room of the ziggurat, where they had sexual intercourse. Babylonian writings firmly state that these beings took on bodily form and walked among men in the days when gods walked upon the face of the earth. Furthermore, the Babylonian writings say with certainty that their eyes beheld them. Each city of Sumer, Babylonia, had their own personal god and ziggurat dedicated to them, where the same nightly activities took place between their Nephilim gods and mortal women. Each ziggurat had priests who attended to the ever beck and call of these Nephilim gods, whose wishes were their command. Stories about their gods, once considered myths, may in fact be actual as recorded and believed by Herodotus, a credible Greek historian that earned him the title the Father of History. There is enough evidence in biblical accounts to say that it did happen. By word of mouth, the accounts of the magnificence of the Etemenanki ziggurat was spread by traders and visitors to the city, and in time became wrongly associated with the original Tower of Babel. It, the Marduk ziggurat, became located in Babylon, Babylon and Babel being associated. Babylon is from the Akkadian word Bab-ilu, which means gate of the god, and has nothing to do with confusion of languages. Constant war and turmoil virtually emptied the city of Babylon in 275 BC. By 141 BC, the city was in complete desolation and ruin. Saddam Hussein partially restored part of the city, and apparently the foundation base of the Marduk ziggurat had been rediscovered. Even though the Sumerians developed one of the earliest civilizations on Earth, it wasn't until the middle of the 19th century that anyone knew that they had preceded the Babylonians. No one suspected that the Sumerian language preceded Akkadian, or the Babylonians had adapted and later modified the Sumerian writing, agriculture, and religious systems. Noah's people restored civilization to the earth following the Great Cataclysm. It is incorrect to say that Noah's people, the Sumerians, invented or developed some of their technology. Correctly stated, they brought this technology and knowledge with them. They had already formulated all the attributes of civilization when they arrived on the scene. The source of their wisdom was the Divine Book of Wisdom, the Flying Scrolls of Adam. Subsequently, today's society can trace much of what we have achieved to far earlier roots in Sumeria, the civilized land, or as the Sumerians called their land, Ki-Enji, the place of the civilized lords.